Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Breakfast with the Gators. We are part of the Stadium and Gale Network and presented to you by our sponsor, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is out of Lake City, Florida, and they are a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. You can give Guy a call if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust, and estate planning. Give him a call at 386-752-7240. Well, fellas, it's Sunday morning. We're all still pretty dejected as the Gators fall to 3-5 after a 24-20 heartbreaking loss to the number 5 Georgia Bulldogs, and that now captures 8 of the last 9. We dropped to Kirby Smart in Georgia. It was right there for us at the taking. I thought we played pretty good in the second half, a lot better effort offensively. We're able to sustain some drives. Just Dev, you know, you're sitting down there, row 3 in the 15-yard line. Just talk about the day, the environment, the stadium, and how things kind of played out.
Yeah, it was cool, man. Florida Georgia is awesome. It belongs in Jacksonville forever. The city showed out like it always does. The world's largest outdoor cocktail party was awesome. Should have won the game. That's all I got, really, for now. Should have won the game.
Devin, you sound like you just played.
Hey, I gave my all for 60 minutes, man. I cheered for the patch. And, I mean.
Did you sing the alma mater at the end?
I say, hey, me and shout out to Graham Marsh, me and him on the way out of the stadium, took our hats off. And as the band played it, we sadly sung the alma mater going up the stairs.
Any visuals on the amount of representation from the guys that played in the game?
I know that's a big Paul Norris sticking point, but no, I did not pay attention to that. I didn't care in the moment, but yeah. It is what it is, man. 8 out of 9 is so embarrassing. You can get into the calls and the replays and whatever, but we're the University of Florida, and to just continuously find ways to lose, you know, this season, and then obviously 8 out of the last 9 to find ways to lose to Georgia, and to, you know, just games like that, man. It's just awful. I'm so ready for the new era of Gator football. I know that we're only a couple more games left of this year, and then we got, you know, a coaching search and all the stuff after that. But it's just I'm so ready for something new, man.
Will you walk in the stadium, you see the staff wearing blue for the first time all year. You come into this game, not much expectations since we don't have Billy Napier on the sidelines for the first time in 4 years. It still played out at the end the way we lose, kind of a Billy Napier football team.
I would disagree. I would say that the atmosphere around the game was fantastic. It felt like Florida fans were having so much fun because it really was the dawn of a new era. It was turning the page finally from this Billy Napier black flag mentality gimmick type of Sun Belt sort of coaching staff into somebody who was serious. And it's crazy that, you know, Billy Gonzalez is what we got to consider serious now. But I thought the guys played their absolute hearts out. I mean, we sort of, you know, I was joking with Florida fans around the tailgate. I was like, I mean, think about it. You know, we're 3-4, and if Billy Napier was coaching this game, you would have no prayer that we were going to win, and he's not. And so you got to think we have some sort of shot. But even then, I was kind of just like happy to be there and see the coaching staff wearing school colors. They were no longer being held hostage and forced to wear black because not all of them were wearing blue. Some of them were wearing white. Billy Gonzalez even changed into a white windbreaker there at the end. So it's nice to know that, you know, it is no longer a JV rec league thing where you all have to wear matching black flag mentality polos out on the field to show the team that it's time to show up. But hats off to Billy G and the staff. I thought that they had the guys prepared and ready to go. And I kept thinking that, you know, you need to get the game to the fourth quarter. It was going to, you were going to know if Florida had shown up in the first quarter, and if they did and they could get it to the fourth quarter, weird things happen in Jacksonville. We almost had it happen where, you know, they snapped the ball over Gunnar Stockton's head and we get, you know, weird review and things like that. But at the end of the day, you know, if he connects on a fourth and inches and, you know, Jaden Ball doesn't flip and he, you know, gets another yard, then he'll probably win the game. If Lagway hits, you know, two of the wide open guys that he's paid handsomely to hit, then we probably win the game. And so it's like one final nail in the coffin of the Billy Napier era where it's like, you know, too little, too late. It was right there for the taking, and we just didn't do what it took. And you kind of got to see the flip side with Georgia where they were on the ropes, and that's why they're a championship program. Like, they're down. They didn't give up. They got a fourth down stop, and then they drove it right down our throats and scored a go-ahead touchdown. And then when they needed two more stops, they got it. And when they needed two first downs, they got it.
Yeah, four wins this year for Georgia while trailing or tied at the half, which is most in the FBS. Going back to what you just said a few minutes ago, Will, talking to Florida fans at the tailgate. Hunter, were you talking to our tailgate today?
Yeah, I think I said a word or two. Might have gotten the mic, helped out with the national anthem there for the annual beer pong tournament. We had a good time. Breakfast boys showed up. Obviously, you know, goes without saying that Will wasn't there. Don't even need to mention that. It's a weekly occurrence here. It's tradition at this point.
It wasn't a gala, so I didn't feel it necessary.
Of course. But we had a good time. We had a really good time. And honestly, to Will's point, like the energy, I think, around tailgates going into the stadium, in the stadium with Florida fans we felt like we were free. Like, all right, bad man's gone. Can't hurt us anymore. You know, what do we have to lose? And it was a nice reminder that as, you know, bad of a man as Billy Napier is and with how many times he hurt us, it's sports, man. You're still going to get hurt, and the Florida Gators found a way to hurt us anyways. And you know, you could say house money all you want, but I think when we tied it up 7-7, everyone kind of looked around thinking the same thing, like, oh, we got a shot here. Like, here we go. And then you start believing, and then that happens. So, no moral victories, as our fearless leader said in the press conference or, you know, post game afterwards. But, you know, they did play hard. They did fight hard, but ultimately they lost, and it sucks. I'm hurt. We're hurting, boys.
I will say I did like how smooth the game day operation looked. Somehow it was like addition by subtraction. I mean, no pre-snap penalties that I remember.
How about the fact that we actually had all of our timeouts there in crunch time where, like, we ended up not getting the stop, but we had four timeouts, including the two-minute warning. I don't think that has happened in the last 3.5 years.
The only thing that I would have critiqued for how he handled the game, just managing the game, was right before the two-minute warning at the end of the game. I think there was like 2:15 left when they snapped the ball, and he let it run down to the two-minute warning with one timeout left. I guess that's sort of like a, you know, do you want to take your timeout before or after the two-minute warning sort of deal? But
yeah,
I thought he could have called the timeout before the two-minute warning. It ends up not really mattering if you can't get the stop either way. But that was the only critique that I had in terms of game management. I didn't see anybody say that we had less than 11 guys on the field on any special teams. Turns out you're allowed to have 11 guys on every single special teams play, no matter what. So it was good to see Billy G take advantage of that new rule that you're allowed to have that many guys out there every time.
Yeah, I thought defensively too. We got the calls in on time. No one was standing around looking. Defenders were in place at all times. So game day operationals were great.
A little pace and rhythm to the offense at times.
Oh, my bad. I don't know what's going on.
A little pace and rhythm was nice to see. You know, they struggled at times. But...
Oh yeah, Jackson.
There you go. Some sound effects.
I like that.
I thought Billy just kind of – Billy Gonzalez, he almost is just a consummate professional. Like, he goes up there, and it was all business. It seemed like it was going to be all business when he was from his, you know, kind of introductory press conference as the interim, all the way through the game day operations, all the way through what he said in the post game. I mean, I loved what he had to say afterwards. He's like, those guys played their absolute butts off, but it wasn't good enough. And what matters at the end of the day is wins and losses. Like, it's the University of Florida. You expect to win, and there are no moral victories. And it was just music to my ears because, you know, the last 3.5 years, it's been like every single time we've lost a game, which we've lost tons of very close games under Billy Napier. It's like, well, we're close and we're going to double down on the process. And like, we're going to get there, I promise. And he kind of just, he said what the average fan is thinking. It's just like, You know, it was great to be in the game against number five Georgia with an interim head coach, but at the end of the day, it was there to win, and we didn't get it done. And he just, I guess, you know, it's kind of a low bar, but it's so refreshing to actually hear that.
And I think that that's kind of too what makes it so frustrating. Just like looking back on all the opportunities missed, but also just Georgia is the last 2 years, Georgia's just been so gettable. And, you know, you see the talent when we're out there. You see, you know, we're a team that's out there with an interim coach just going toe to toe with Kirby Smart, like Kirby and Billy G going back and forth with the, with you know, a heavyweight matchup, if you will. But I know me and Will, we kind of disagreed on how good that Georgia team is. I personally don't think that I don't think that's a team that's going to win the SEC or win a national championship this year.
No, and I would agree with you there, but I think that they are definitely a top 10 team in college football. And, you know, it's kind of obviously dumb and sort of a joke, but I mean, name a better 3-5 team out there than the Florida Gators. Come on. But I do, you're right that it's what makes it so frustrating, because Georgia is definitely gettable, just like Alabama is gettable, and just like, you know, Tennessee is gettable, and we haven't been able to get them because of, you know, coaching decisions and things like that. And it is funny that, like, we almost finally got Georgia, you know, with Billy Napier's players. He just had to get out of the way for us to even have a chance to get them. No dumb trick plays or anything like that that just caused catastrophic things. But, you know, I think Georgia's a very good team. I think that Florida is a top 10, top 15 roster in college football. And I think that if Billy Gonzalez had been coaching us all year, then we're probably 5-3 at worst. We definitely beat USF, right?
Yeah. You know? And you don't want to say it too terribly loud, but if the quarterback plays better.
Oh, yeah.
Say it loud. Say it loud.
We can go ahead and say it loud. I mean, how much is Lagway making? Like $3 to $5 million? And
it's, you know, not like, good enough. It wasn't good enough.
Right. And, you know, it's I kind of go back and forth a little bit, because I know that, you know, he obviously had the weird offseason, and he's dealing with Billy Napier coaching him, and the play calling has been terrible. And today I thought it was actually pretty good, way less predictable than it has been the last 3.5 years. Actually looked more like the spring games when Ryan O'Hara and Russ Callaway were calling plays for the orange and blue team. But, you know, when you got wide open guys there, you've got to hit them. It's just the bottom line when the game's on the line. And if you don't, that's like what separates good players from great. And you can kind of see like what really is holding Lagway back. Like, he just doesn't have that mentality that like a Tebow had. And I know Tebow is, like, you know, arguably the best quarterback to ever play in college football, let alone at the University of Florida. But like, Lagway is scrambling there and he gets just knocked back by a safety, dragged down. And like, Lagway is like 6'4", 250 pounds. Tim Tebow used to seek that guy out and run him over because he knew he was bigger, faster, stronger. And we ended up converting on the 3rd-and-1, but it's just kind of like that sort of thing. Like, Tebow didn't get dragged down, you know, for on 3rd-and-inches on scrambling and like fumble the ball and that sort of thing. And he doesn't seem to have that generational it factor that it seemed like he was going to have even last year when he was making these crazy, you know, offhanded throws. And sometimes you do see the highlights, but some of the routine plays, like that 4th-down throw that he threw to Trey Wilson, like, I don't know what the deal was with the hot route or everything, but the bottom line is it was like 4 feet behind Trey Wilson, and it was so far behind him, he almost got it picked, and it should have been like out there, you know, on the sideline. And if it was a good throw, then maybe, you know, he makes a dive and catch for a first down.
If it was more towards the sideline, that's getting house for sticks. So
no, the defense back jumped in front and he caught it. But it was like, if you look at Trey Wilson, he's turned around trying to catch it on his back shoulder instead of out in front of him. And you just like, you, it's not even just this game. Like, Lagway does that all the time where he has terrible throws that are all like kind of within 10 yards. And he's just not nearly consistent enough to be a winning quarterback that makes winning plays. Like, who was a better, more talented quarterback, Gunnar Stockton or DJ Lagway? I would say DJ Lagway has way more talent. Who was a winning quarterback? Gunnar Stockton.
And, you know? Will, you touched on the play call a little bit. We're going to get to our first caller, Jake. A few questionable decisions he saw, but overall, let's get his thoughts.
Hey, guys. Jake from New Orleans here. Excited to hear y'all talk about the play calling. Obviously, such a tough game, but there were some good things. But I really think a few of those read options, those go our way. You know, we're sitting here with a different result. Appreciate what y'all do. Go Gators.
Yeah, and then the two biggest, I thought Lagway ran with conviction tonight on those design quarterback powers or quarterback runs, whatever you want to call it. That second and 20 where I think he picked up 28 yards, made a defender miss shortly off the line of scrimmage. And then another one late, I believe it was our last scoring drive opportunity. Linebacker goes out wide with the running back. He takes it for 7-8 yards and gets it the third and one or at least a first down. But, yeah, the second scoring drive where we settled for a field goal after a big play to Trey Wilson. Read option, Lagway keeps it, thought he could get to the edge. Gets a yard, maybe gets back to the line of scrimmage. And then late that, I think it's third and four, it's the eventual drive where we had the turnover on downs, and we call a read option, Lagway keeps it. Will, you hit on a little bit. Hunter, what were your thoughts on the overall play calling and maybe those instances?
Yeah, play calling as a whole, I thought was fine. To Will's point, I think the biggest part was it wasn't all that predictable, right? It wasn't where I'm sitting there watching going, all right, here's the run or here's the bubble screen. Or, you know, it didn't feel predictable, so that was nice. Kept you guessing a little bit, and that's a massive improvement in and of itself. I thought the sequencing was solid and the balance between the pass and the run. I would say with the DJ Lagway runs early, they spammed it a little bit. I thought a little bit too much off the bat, and then it kind of started working there as the game went on. You guys tell me if you disagree. I don't know that someone next to me, when he had one of the big runs, was like, oh, there's like the quick DJ we saw last year. I thought he still looked slow. I mean, they were nice runs, and it worked out. But, I mean, am I wrong there? I don't know.
I think 28 yarder here is pretty darn explosive.
I think he has two speeds. He has his sprinting straight line speed like on that 20 yard where he looked pretty good. And then he has his climbing the pocket and escaping. And he could not possibly be slower when he's trying to escape the pocket.
I personally like the quarterback run getting involved. It was a nice, you know, refreshing thing to see. We joked about it a few weeks ago, but you kind of long for the Dan Mullen playbook. And I think that it was different though. It was like straight quarterback dives instead of like quarterback draws.
Right.
So it was a nice little wrinkle that we hadn't really seen, and it kind of must mean that Lagway's leg is getting healthier and feeling better, even though the speed hasn't come back quite yet.
Yeah, I think that's just another wrinkle in the offense that we wanted. You know, get George's defense second guessing a little bit. And I thought we threw the ball downfield at a higher clip today. Obviously, that first touchdown to Trey Wilson, even one to Jaden Ball on a wheel route that ended up being a pass interference. So I thought Billy Gonzalez, he said it's going to be a collaboration effort. Russ Callaway doing the game planning with Ryan O'Hare calling plays. And I think that organization and the offensive coaching staff is going to pay off these last four games.
Yeah, I thought that a point in the second half, we really started leaning on them. That drive after they went up 17-10, you know, I don't know what the how many plays and how much time it took off the clock, but it seemed like it was like a 7-minute touchdown drive that we kind of asserted our will and seemed like we changed the tenor of the game a little bit in that drive.
I thought one of the things that we did in that drive that really impressed me that we really never did under Billy Napier was we threw it downfield even if we weren't trying to complete passes, like throwing the wheel route to Jaden Ball and you get a pass interference. Like that's a huge play.
Give yourself
another pass interference. Exactly.
Pass interference.
Yeah. Yeah. And I loved how it was not predictable, you know, like we would get into the red zone and granted, you know, the QB reads didn't work. But I saw Tony Livingston trot out there and I just turned to my dad. I was like, well, here comes Livingston for his classic, you know, little rollout thing. And then we ran a QB read, and I was like, whoa. And so it was things like that where, you know, if two of those plays work and the Gators are up 24-7 at halftime, we're probably talking about how Billy Napier or Billy Gonzalez, like, maybe on his way to winning this job. it doesn't work. And so maybe, you know, it's for the best long term. But I thought the plan was pretty good. Like, they had a plan that was good enough to have us in a dogfight with, you know, the number five team in the country, with no Vernell Brown Jr., Dallas Wilson getting hurt, just banged up all over the place. It was basically, you know, Jaden Baugh. And then whenever Jaden Baugh needed a water break, Katie Daniels got in for like five carries the entire game, which was also very nice to see. I saw a lot of situational, you know, anytime it was third down, it was Jaden Baugh coming back in, which was, it was nice that we weren't, you know, taking turns with some sort of timeshare thing going on in the backfield. But I wish he had broken out a little bit more.
Will, to your credit, I remember we talked a little bit about Trey Wilson. Honestly, I don't remember if it was on the podcast or offline, but Trey looked good. I mean, and it wasn't just, you know, we talk about him as like a gadget player, and you've talked often about how with slant routes and certain things, he runs those well. But some of the downfield routes today too, and continuing to create, obviously, the 40-yard touchdown there, him staying in the play as DJ rolled out. But I mean, he looked awesome, and he deserves some flowers for sure. So I was impressed. Yeah,
I thought he looked really good, especially there those first couple of drives. And it's crazy, you know, you start to throw him the ball downfield a little more, and guess what opens up? Is we throw him a bubble screen, and it looked like the most crisp bubble screen we've run in 2 years. And it goes for like 6 yards. The Georgia player makes a nice tackle, but you know, it didn't have me throwing up in my seat whenever we ran a bubble screen. I thought it was like well timed, it was well sequenced, it looked crisp with like the ball coming out quickly. It was blocked up well. The Georgia player just made a nice play. But yeah, I agree. Trey Wilson played good. Happy for him. Hopefully VB3 and Dallas Wilson can get back, and we can see some real you know, downfield passing with those guys on the outside, and then, you know, Trey and Mizell kind of in the middle.
Yeah, we've hit on the offensive side of the ball defensively. We held Georgia at 24 points. I think that's their lowest scoring outing in 10 years. How many did they score in the 2020 game, COVID?
28.
Yeah.
So, yeah, lowest they've had in about a decade in this game at 24 points. Obviously, the big one, Chauncey Bowens, former Florida commit, with the icing on the cake late. But, man, I thought Jordan Castell has been reading some tweets. I thought he played superb today. I thought Miles Graham played good. Some questionable decisions making him be on coverage with Zachariah Branch. There was a big third down, I believe, in the third quarter, late second. I think it was third quarter, a big third down that they converted with Miles Graham on a Branch. But what'd you guys see defensively? Not much pressure on the quarterback. We did get a big sack late with George Gums. But, Dev, what did you notice defensively?
Yeah, I thought that they played hard. They flew around. To Will's credit, he called it. Miles Graham's going to lead the boys, and they're going to play with some pride. You got to be proud of the effort. I mean, you hate putting them in a spot that we had too late. You know, you go for it on that fourth down with 3.5 minutes left, and just kind of cross your fingers that they can get one more stop and get the offense back out there. You hope that, you know, when you go for it on that fourth and inches, on their own on their 15-yard line, that if we don't get it, that we can get the ball back. But you know, that's a good team on the other side too. They scheme guys up. They put, you know, Miles Graham in a precarious spot, trying to cover their best wide receiver, their fastest wide receiver. You tip your cap to them when they make good play calls. I mean, they executed and they scored when they had to. It's kind of what we talked about this past week, where, you know, their offense is capable of doing what's necessary. And, you know, this game, it was kind of a slugfest. You know, when they needed to get into a shootout against a Tennessee, they're able to get into that shootout. You know, this one kind of felt more like the Bama game that they played earlier this year in Athens. You know, that game, they weren't able to do enough on offense. Obviously, I think they lost 24-21. But similar style game, and proud of how the defense showed up, proud of how the whole team showed up. But, moral victories aren't good enough in rivalry games, especially. So it's hard to, you know, get excited about the defense when you still lost. So there's always like the shoulda, coulda, woulda. When you're trying to go back over a game that rips your heart out like that one did. So It good stuff though. It makes you feel good when you're going into, you know, the rest of the season. We're gonna screw somebody's season up. Like you go into Oxford, Tennessee coming to town late. If this defense is playing like that, and I think the offense is gonna keep getting better, as long as they keep playing hard and stay in the fight, I think this is a team that's going to mess up somebody's season here in November.
Yeah, and we'll be making that trip to Oxford, and it'll be nice to steal one from our future head coach.
Yeah, on the defense, you know, I know they gave up 24 points, so it doesn't exactly look like, you know, the vintage Muschamp or, you know, those kind of defenses. But I thought the 24 points was a little misleading. You know, Georgia went right down the field on the very first drive, and I thought we might be in trouble all the way. But if you watch the first drive closely, every single downfield, you know, any positive gain they had was all on play action, and we were stuffing the run big time. And I was hoping that we would be able to stop the run pretty good once they sort of ran out of the rinky dink play action. And I was very impressed. I think Georgia had only given up like one sack or something all year, which was a crazy stat. I don't know if we actually registered multiple sacks, but we had like three or four plays where we hit Gunnar Stockton like right at the line of scrimmage. And so, you know, give or take, they basically were sacks. Forced him to throw his second turnover or interception of the game. We kind of lit him up a little bit with some pressure. You know, I know you can sort of nitpick the play where Zachariah Branch makes the third down, but that's kind of, you live and die by the Ron Roberts. You know, he does these sim pressures and they called a stunt, and the stunt was just a little late getting there. If it's another half second, then it's probably a sack fumble. And you kind of are isolating your linebackers. And to Miles Graham's credit, like, he's been dynamite in a lot of those spots throughout the season. He just didn't get that one. But also, I mean, we got to talk about the punter. The punter put the defense in awful situations. Like those 3 points that Georgia got at the end of the half to tie it up, like, that was because the punter was terrible. And he had terrible punts before then, and he's had terrible punts all season. And so I don't know if we have some walk-on freshman or somebody, but whoever this grad transfer punter is, he's got to go. We need somebody else punting the ball for the rest of the season.
It felt like that went both ways. I mean, Georgia's punter, Florida's punter. I mean, I felt like every punt I was watching, I was like, these guys stink. My goodness. I
get tough Jackson out for, there. Tough day for Nick De La Torre when it comes to the punter's days.
Yeah. It's been a tough year for Nick De La Torre.
Shout out. Speaking of specialists, shout out to Trace Mack. That guy has been fantastic ever since he, you know, kind of had a bad game against LIU. But it's crazy how good he is whenever he's not being like intentionally iced by his own team committing some sort of procedural infraction. He just nails it, you know, 56 yards, NFL type leg, and just crunch time doesn't matter. He
with a bad snap.
I was gonna say give the punter credit. Oh yeah, as bad as the punter was, that was a sick hold. He came over the sideline. We were right there on the rail. We were yelling his name. We're like, he gave the thumbs up. So it was a big play by him.
Well, despite the loss,
scholarship by holding snaps. No more punting. Only holding. Use his hands, not his feet.
Well, I don't want to harp on this too much. We've hit it on numerous occasions, but just another, you know, indication that this is not a rebuild for the next head coach. Hunter, what optimism does this roster provide for you, whether it's Lane Kiffin or a Jeff Brohm or a Jed Fish that comes and coaches Florida in 2026? I mean, we're right. How close are we to being that playoff caliber in contention for a playoff?
We're right there. I mean, we are. We're right there. And it seems silly to say, right, you're 3-5. If rival fans watch this clip, that, you know, laugh us out of the room. But the talent's so obviously there. It's so obviously there. And I think that's part of the reason why this game was so frustrating, not just because they showed us they were in it and we had a chance to win, but also because all the people that have been calling for Billy for so long, whether it was last year or whether it was two games into this year, the frustrations were when we were losing these games, whether it be USF, LSU, Miami, is that it was so obviously the coaching and not the talent and the players you have on the field, but the coaching and Billy Napier. And so to watch us play this game and hang in there and a lot of the procedural issues go away and a lot of the play calling predictability goes away, all the things we knew were kind of on Billy's shoulders showed itself today. And so, you know, yeah, you lost, but it shows you once again that the talent's there and the infrastructure's there. And if the right coach comes in, they'll be able to turn this thing around really quickly.
Just think about if the coach we think we're getting, we actually get that offense with Jaden Bott running back, with Vernell Brown, with Dallas Wilson, with his quarterback, whoever it may be. And he's shown, you know, I give him the keys to whatever quarterback he wants. And I think we can all, you know, trust that he's going to have him ready to play, whoever that guy is.
Yeah. Will and I got to listen to Steve Spurrier Thursday night. And he mentioned NIL and how hard it is to coach in this era. Obviously he's got no real input since he hasn't had the ability to coach in this environment, but four games remain. Obviously, Tramell Jones can play in three of those without burning a red shirt. How hard is it, Will? You know, maybe we do need a sparker to see what this guy can provide, because in 2026, it's going to be an open quarterback competition. There's any way you want to see Tramell Jones on the field just show something different offensively?
No, and real quick to go back to Hunter's point about the talent being there, it reminds me a lot of what Tate Casey said when we had him on for Breakfast Bites right before, I think it was the Texas game or the Texas A&M game?
Texas.
I'm sure he's going to make a great point.
I'm sure he is.
He's back.
There you go.
Oh, well, he was talking about the difference between Ron Zook and Urban Meyer when Zook was fired. And he was basically saying that, you know, that Zook's last team lost a bunch of one score games and it really didn't have much attrition, but you could tell the talent was there. And then Urban came in and he totally flipped the mindset. And that's kind of what the Gators need right now. Like, they need somebody who's going to bring that killer mentality that, you know, when you're up three with the ball and the number five team in the country, you're going to go and win the damn game. As far as seeing Tramell Jones, no, absolutely not. I think Lagway has all the talent in the world. He needs as many reps as possible. It's going to be frustrating sometimes, but you know, the guy's 6'5", 250 with a rocket arm. And, you know, and you can just see, like we've been talking about with the talent, you can see that it is there. He needs as many reps as possible. I know that, you know, there's rumors going around. He just recently started practicing against the ones once we had a coaching change. So I think if you continue to see that, hopefully you'll continue to see some improvement. He needs to improve the fundamentals and hopefully he'll hit some of these shorter throws, but I think you stick with him. He, you know, he's certainly not losing games. Like, he didn't make bad plays, so to speak, last night. He just, you know, when you have such high expectations for a five-star Gatorade player, National Player of the Year type quarterback, you expect him to make those plays. And so I think we got to keep giving him the opportunity. And as long as, you know, once, if the defense starts to falter, then you'll know it's time to make a change. But as long as the defense is showing up and they think he's the leader and that he's the guy to get them the ball, then I think we stick with DJ. But other people can have a difference of opinion because, you know, what else do we have to lose at this point?
And I think that, you know, obviously it was a great throw to Eugene Wilson early for the touchdown. The perception of Lagway's game is a whole lot different if that replay goes our way at the end of the game. Because, I mean, he's rolling to his left. You know, obviously he's gotten criticized pretty heavily, rightfully so, I guess. Throwing across his body, rolling to his left. I think it was 50, 55 yards downfield. It seemed like it was down to the 21-yard line. That's a long throw, and it was a 50-50 call. I still haven't seen a replay where I see the ball actually hit the ground. And, you know, obviously we're 35 minutes in, so all the rival fans that have tuned in to hear us cope have probably tuned out by now. Their attention span is pretty short. So I haven't seen the replay where that ball hit the ground. We saw all the different angles in the stadium. You know, I've seen the TV broadcast that got posted on Twitter of it. The perception of Lagway's game is a lot different if he makes that throw, hits that throw, or gets that call.
Yeah, I mean, he's a couple throws away. Like, if he hits Amir Jackson on the seam.
He missed Tank Hawkins on a deep ball in the third quarter, I think. That was right.
I think that was in the first half, and we could have gone down there and won the middle eight, potentially.
Oh, is it the end of the second quarter?
Yeah, I believe it was into the second quarter, which I think – he only really had a safety to miss and a 40-yard dash, make one guy move, and that's six, and the Gators are up potentially 10 because Georgia went down and got that field goal to tie it at the half.
So many opportunities in that game, man.
Yeah, I thought Florida has the better athletes, at least offensively. I think we're just way too talented. For the fourth straight year, scoring 20 points against Georgia. So I don't know how much money I need to throw on the team total of exactly 20 points next year. That'll be dependent on who our head coach is.
Hopefully we're scoring more than 20 next year.
Hopefully. Anything else to talk about football-wise, fellas, or do we want to jump into a winning program that is sitting behind Dev's shoulders?
It's officially basketball season.
I will say it's the last time until 2028. One more time. We started it this way. We'll end the football talk this way. Shout out to Jacksonville. I already can't wait for the next time that this game is where it belongs in Duval County, and I hope it never leaves again after these 2 years.
Yeah,
yeah.
Kirby is radicalizing me.
Shout out to Hunter and his dad throwing a sweet tailgate in the tailgater's lot off of Talleyrand. A lot of fun, a lot of beer pong competitions, cornhole, a lot of good barbecue. So shout out to Hunter and his family for a great time.
Yes, sir. It was a good time. I think Will, though, I got to give him a shout out. Those wings he was making this morning. Getting a text at like 6 a.m. as the sun's rising and Will grilling some wings. I mean, that's what it's all about, man. Hey, that's what it's all about.
We came to play for the patch today, and we did the best we could. I think Kirby is radicalizing me that we should never have this game ever moved out of Jacksonville. No sort of split with like home and home and then Jacksonville the third year or anything like that. You know, it's bad enough that he complains, but then he comes and he beats us here every year. Just shut up, Kirby.
That's why it's annoying they're doing Atlanta-Tampa, because like I'm for it being in Jacksonville forever, but if you have to do 2 years away from it because of the construction, well, then take that as the opportunity to do Athens-Gainesville, but I digress.
Notably, Kirby never had a problem with moving the Georgia Tech game from campus to Mercedes-Benz.
Right.
Interesting.
Hypocrite.
Let's talk some basketball.
Yeah, fellas, we opened it up in about 36 hours. We faced the number 11 Arizona Wildcats in the Hall of Fame series in Las Vegas, where Florida comes in at number 3 in the country. I mean, it's so hard to repeat. Obviously, that's what we as fans want. This is a very loaded team. We do have to replace some of the three greatest guards to ever wear the Florida uniform. We got Boogie Flan, Xavier Lee, and the transfer portal, a few freshmen that are going to contribute as well. But, Dev, expectations for the Gators, what would you call this as a successful season, even if we don't hoist a national championship trophy?
I think that last year's team accomplished just about everything you can hope for a basketball team to accomplish, except win the SEC regular season. So I would really like to win the SEC regular season. I think that that the SEC tournament's fun, NCAA tournament's fun. Hanging a banner is always what it's about. So you get one for the regular season, you get one for the tournament, you get one for the conference tournament and the big tournament. So I'd like to see us win the regular season. I think that, we're the favorites coming into this year. We talked about it a little bit this week, but it's so hard for teams to repeat, obviously, but to kind of break out of that shadow. So I'm interested in the non-conference and going into early season conference play to see how this team starts to create their own legacy. A lot of those same big men that were on last year's team, all of them are back, but these guards are going to be new. So I'm sure there'll be some growing pains, a big test early. I think we're 3.5-point favorites on Monday night. So I'm excited to see how these guards handle that. There's a standard at this program now, and Todd's done a great job of setting that standard quick, setting that standard early. And I'm excited to see how the new guys in the backcourt live up to that standard and see how this team goes about their business this year. It's exciting stuff. It's fun to root for a winner. So I'm excited to see what they can do.
Yeah, and we discussed on the last show the second run of the championship for the 06-07 team. We really didn't get tested early until we went to Kansas, I believe, in first week of December, maybe a few days after Thanksgiving. Really no challenges the first 5-6 games. This team is going to get punched in the mouth early. Arizona, we got Duke, we got at Cameron Indoor, and then in Madison Square Garden against UConn, who we played in the round of 32, who's the two-time defending champs under Hurley before we knocked them out and won the championship a season ago. Will, thoughts on Golden, where this team goes, and in terms of creating their own legacy?
I'm very excited. These guys, if you listen to them talk, they're very well aware of the expectations. And, you know, guys like Alex Connan and Tommy Houck, they just talk about how, you know, like the, they don't shy away from it. They embrace it. They want the target on their back. They know and openly acknowledge that the target's going to be on their back. But I think they're kind of made for it. Like, they went through an absolute gauntlet, not even last year, but the year before, when they were all kind of growing up as freshmen. They fell a little short against Auburn in the SEC tournament finals. And then, you know, kind of got hosed a little defensively with, and then some bad calls against Colorado. But these guys seem made for it to go back to back. It's hard to expect them to do that, but I love what Dev said about winning the SEC regular season as a, you know, season ticket holder that goes to every single home game. That means a huge amount, especially because we just never did it under Mike White. And even, you know, when Billy was running the SEC, it was hard to win the SEC regular season. And that's like, you know, bona fide, you were the best team in the conference every year. So winning the SEC regular season would be a huge, huge accomplishment. And I think, you know, I heard Jonathan Sapphire talk the other day on the Gator Nation football podcast saying that their goal every year is to make the second weekend, because once you make the second weekend, you just got to let the chips fall where they may, and you got a chance to win the national championship. And so winning the SEC regular season and making the Sweet 16, I think, are the expectations. And if these guys can reach another Final Four and repeat, we certainly deserve it for all the turmoil that we've been through on the football side of things.
Yeah, and we'll provide a few hot takes if you fellas have any. I am going to ban Deb for nominating Coach Golden for Coach of the Year or SEC Coach of the Year. We've seen his track record there. So, Deb, you got to come up with a new hot take for Hoops.
We'll start somewhere else then, so I can come up with something.
All right, I'll start off. Thomas Houck, first team All-American, and potential he'll be a Naismith finalist.
Oh man, you stole mine. You didn't know you stole mine, but mine was going to be that Tommy Howe was going to be finished as a top five player in Naismith voting. I mean, I think he's going to have an incredible year. I mean, all the preseason accolades that come out, and it's well deserved for all these guys. Like, you see Condon on all the first team on the preseason list, and it's well deserved. I think Condon's going to have a great year, but to me, Tommy Howe's that guy. I mean, I am so excited to watch this dude play basketball. So I'm doubling up. I think Tommy Howe, I'm with Jackson there.
I think that the Gators will have three lottery picks selected in the NBA draft for the first time since the 04s went back-to-back with Boogie Flan, Alex Condon, and Tommy Houck.
Try this one on for size. Urban Klavjar leads the SEC in three-point percentage.
I like that. That's a great.
Yeah, that's a good one, Dev. That's a good one to throw in there. I'll add one more. Ruben Chinleyu, SEC Defensive Player of the Year.
Like that too.
I think he is going to mold into a – he's continuing to develop. I think we're going to see a little bit more offensively from him this season, but his defense, he's going to be an anchor for us down there in the interior.
I got one more for you. The Gators sweep Kentucky, and good. Denzel Aberdeen doesn't sniff a win in the O'Connell Center.
Love the it. Only pushback I'll say there is that's not a hot take, man. We're the University of Florida now. Come on now. It's our conference.
Wait a minute, Will. Don't you know that they have the best returning guard in the SEC?
There was a material change in the facts. From when I said that to what happened after I said that.
Speaking
just to frame it, Devin, you need to frame it for the audience because these basketball takes have stayed in the group chat. We need to put Will's takes on the list.
They've been publicly stated on Twitter.
In May of 2025, Will Norris was calling Denzel Aberdeen the seventh man off Kentucky's bench, the best returning guard in the SEC. Hey, we'll see.
Listen. I mean, I know you are no stranger to bad takes. And so, you know, who among us, let he who hath not sinned throw the first stone.
Hey, everybody just put your weapons down.
All at once. I mean, if Jackson's banning Devin from Coach of the Year preseason hot takes, I think he's got to ban Will from saying Florida basketball is going to go like 40-0, right? I mean,
just no undefeated seasons.
Hey, I set the expectations low. I just said, you know, just sweet
16. Three lottery picks.
We structured this show perfectly. You couldn't like get a smile on my face for the last 12 hours. And then we start talking about Gator basketball and all of a sudden I got a little pep in my step. speaking of Kentucky though, who do you guys think is going to finish second in the SEC? Cause I'm assuming we'll all say Florida is going to win the SEC.
I'll say Tennessee.
I think that's a good pick.
I'll go Kentucky.
I was going to go Bama. I know that they're kind of supposed to be down a little bit this year, but
never. I'll go with the Tennessee pick. I mean, it doesn't matter who Rick Barnes has on there. He's gonna you know have a top four team in the SEC and then get knocked out earlier than expected in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Auburn is this year without Bruce. How Stephen Pearl handles the. The big
John Calipari's got a little bit more. When he showed up last year, zero players were on the roster. I think he retains like four or five, which is improvement. And he's got another loaded high school class coming in. So can't count the Hogs either.
He's got to replace a point guard.
All right. Any last comments, fellas? Or we'll reconvene later this week, and I believe we got a collaboration episode dropping Wednesday morning with Corey from Stadium and Gale. Again, basketball talk. Go follow Neil Blackman and those guys at Florida Basketball Hour. They do a tremendous job of breaking down the hoops. Very knowledgeable, and now it's officially hoop season. So go follow them and go support those guys. They're terrific.
Yeah, they're great. Big couple days in Vegas. Jags out there this afternoon, and then Gators on Monday night.
That'll be fun. The Gators also, they come to Jacksonville, interestingly enough, on a Sunday night to play the Miami Hurricanes. So I'll be looking to go to that game. But interesting, the Gators playing on a Sunday night. It's almost like we're kind of taking over Sunday night football. We are the University of Football. The University of Florida.
That's the oldest weekend, right?
I'll be getting in the car about 5 a.m. leaving Tupelo and going the 9-10 hour drive back to Jacksonville and make sure I'm in the seats for another Todd Golden win.
There we go.
We're making that same drive from Tupelo the same day. I don't know if I'll be able to double up on football Saturday and then that drive and then Gator basketball Sunday night. We'll see.
Oh, come on. You're telling me you won't be fired up after you tell 10,000 Ole Miss fans you're stealing their coach?
That's right. That's a good point. And after we ruined their season. Tennessee's season got ruined last night. So that just leaves Ole Miss, and then we need to have somebody beat Georgia. But we're getting awfully close to ruining all the seasons that we need ruined and can go watch Ohio State or Indiana or whoever win a national championship, as long as it's not
Cherry on top, Mike Norvell got a big win against the Wake Forest Demon Deacons.
Yeah, you might beat Florida State nine straight times in league play, but you certainly won't beat them 10 straight.
No, you will not. Mike Alford looks like a genius for that vote of confidence he gave to Mike Norvell.
The best thing about being 2-11 in your last 13 ACC games is the chance to go 3-11, right?
That's a good point.
Hey, we didn't even talk about Miami. Now has dropped two of their last three in a overtime loss to SMU. I don't think did you guys see that 4th-and-9 and how SMU picked up a first down late to go tie the game?
I did not.
I did not either, no.
they snapped the ball, SMU did, 4th and 9, like their own 38, 40-yard line. As soon as the quarterback gets it, they blow the play dead. I'm not sure what the call was, but one of the defensive ends from Miami just leveled the SMU quarterback. Easy 15 yards. They go right down the field. Kick it.
Sound like Miami.
Not at all. Carson Beck, interception in the end zone. In overtime, SMU goes down and punches one in to walk them off. So,
wow. That's what happened to a better bunch of bastards.
Well, guys, again, we're just a part of the Stadium and Gale Network and brought to you by Norris and Norris PA out of Lake City, Florida. You can give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills or trust, and estate planning. And thank you guys for listening. Make sure to like, subscribe, follow us on Twitter at BreakfastWTG, and subscribe to our YouTube page. Go Gators.
Go Gators.
Go Gators.